The first debate between President Obama and Mitt Romney is behind us. I'm Philip Bailey, and this is Noise and Notes. It was a much-anticipated discussion on the country's future, but critics and supporters argued the president gave a lackluster performance. I talked to political commentator Stacey Brooks and Louisville Young Republicans Chairman James Young about the debate, Obama's performance, and where the election goes from here.
I thought the president did a fine job. I mean, he didn't give people the sparks and fireworks that a lot of people wanted. I mean, people have been talking about this debate for a long time. They talk about it like it's a prize fight. So if the president goes out there and he doesn't throw a bunch of punches and isn't aggressive, then that metaphor of the fight takes over and it looks like he just took a bunch of shots from his opponent. The reason why I didn't think he did a fine job was, one, he didn't seem defensive in what he laid out as the facts of his policies versus Mitt Romney's. I feel like he didn't do anything different than he's done in any other debate. When he debated Hillary Clinton, you know, they talked bad. They talked about his "you're nice enough, Hillary" comment and made it seem like that was a big faux pas moment in his debate history. But I don't really feel like when we rush to determine who are winners and losers in debates, I think the issue on the table was who's going to lose the debate last night.
Because it seems the snap judgment is that Romney won the style, the zing, that part of the debate. The aftermath, though, not really so clear, because there have already been some issues and questions about what Romney said that was factually incorrect already.
Well, it's going to be it's certainly interesting. You know, if you want some fact checking, I'm sure we all and anyone listening to this is pretty tech savvy. We turn to Twitter and follow the right people to see who's fact checking or not. And but, you know, it did appear that way, that Mitt Romney certainly came out with the advantage at the debate. I think even some of Obama's biggest supporters, like you said, immediately in the course of the debate, sort of seen that this trend was going to be kind of nasty by the end of the night. You know, it's just one of those things afterwards where we're going to have to see if it outside of us who are ultimately engaged, people like us who sit around the table and talk about it all the time and tweet about it and Facebook about it, are actually going to view this as Mitt Romney did exceptionally well.
I was going to say, Stacey, that's the one part about it where I think you had a good point, which is for a lot of people who are watching this for the first time, 60 million plus, I think, they're seeing this and they might view it as Romney was being sort of pushy with both the moderator and the president.
I think he felt I think for the person that was being initiated to Mitt Romney and the president last night, they would have saw someone who was perhaps overly aggressive, was perhaps trying to set the structure to their advantage. And if the groundwork for who Mitt Romney is was laid out over the course of the summer and through August through the convention as this kind of rich guy who doesn't care about the 47% of those voters, that was probably substantiated with people that were newly initiated with him. At the same time, you know, being on stage at the same time with the president gives you that air of being presidential.
Yeah, these debates are set up to where the incumbent president always looks bad. I think of Bush in 2004. I mean, automatically, this other person's right there, and their job is to go after you. I mean, there's no way you can be presidential with a guy hammering you every other word you say.
Well, I think Obama may have came across, from my perspective, as maybe a little passive. There are certainly some things during the debate that may stick out. I think it was very easy to recognize Obama did not give a lot of face contact, a lot of eye contact with Mitt Romney during the debate. He stayed focused on what's in front of him on his paper. And, you know, we said Mitt Romney was a little too aggressive. Whether that comes across to independents or undecided voters, we'll find out in the next coming days. You know, we'll check the polls. But one thing is if from a Republican perspective, if you're on the solid right and you are someone who's been crying to see Mitt Romney get a little bit more pushy, to begin opening up and saying, look, this is what I believe, and we have got to stand up for this, and this is what's right. And so there will be some that say he's a little too aggressive. There will be some that says this is finally the fire that we've been asking for.
But with respect to what you just said about someone who's on the far right, did Mitt Romney satisfy you beyond performance? If you think about what he said, it seemed like as soon as the president took some ground on an issue. Let's take the health care plan, for instance. When they talked about the health care plan, Romney owned it in a way that he hadn't owned it up until that very night. When he talked about, well, my plan covers pre-existing conditions. Or if you talk about taxes, I'm not going to lower taxes for the top income rate. Those seem to be news-making moments with respect to what Mitt Romney has been saying about his plans and policies up to that point. So did he satisfy the right with respect to his content, or are they satisfied to see him taking the aggression against and being more confrontational and standing up to
the
president?
And let's be honest here. I mean, Mitt Romney's going to need more than that to win this election.
You know, in my opinion, and what some are saying on the networks, is this first debate could really matter. But also, it's going to give we have to give time for the vice presidential debate held here in Kentucky.
Is that more pressure on Biden, too? I mean, perform well, or is it irrelevant what the vice presidential candidate talk about?
I feel like Joe Biden will give the progressives and those on the left more of what they wanted to see the president do.
Which is why he was picked on the ticket in the first place.
Exactly.
And less people will be watching, so credit to Joe Biden. And, you know, I will say this, as a Republican, Joe Biden's very loose. You know, Joe Biden, and we know this.
Sometimes too loose.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Joe Biden really just lets it flow.
Yes,
and what he believes is going to come out. Whether or not you say, whoa, that was a little bit too much. But, you know, and Paul Ryan's going to sort of come at it at the Mitt Romney perspective. Very, you know, more of a statistical guy, more of a, you know. So it's going to be really interesting. I think Biden will be able to play more to the base than Obama would be able to on national television. And I think Ryan will be aggressive, but... you know, so that should be very interesting. But I don't think the poll numbers in these swing states will really – I think we should look at it and gauge it after the vice presidential debate, because then we'll have both sides or both campaigns at its full will be displayed on national television to give people who are undecided, on the fence, newly registered voters, et cetera, an opportunity to chime in.
I think that's interesting that you say that you expect Ryan to be aggressive, because – one thing that I kind of suspect will happen is Joe Biden is going to make him own either his plan or highlight or, I guess, expose what Romney's plan is that they've been trying to be very vague about. Or what loopholes are they going to close or cut out? What cabinet positions are they going to combine? That was interesting last night that Mitt Romney said that, you know, we need more teachers, when he's been saying the exact opposite of that in a lot of his stump speeches and in town hall meetings about, you know, class size and things like that.
I just feel like that we should have maybe a different way in which we go about the debates. Jim Lear's performance was one thing, but maybe someone like Rachel Maddow should moderate one, and Brett Baer from Fox News do another one. And maybe
together.
your
Wouldn't
middle
that be great?
Yeah, your middle person.
That'd be great to see. Yeah, together. Yeah. Or have, you know, like a Twitter feed running across the platform.
Instead of the dials, how about the fact
checkers? To allow the moderator to kind of check in with the facts as the speakers are going in real time, because that was a real lag. So watching a debate, watch it play out, watching someone win on style, and then the next day having to back it up with all these fact checkers questioning the substance of the debate, I think is a disservice to voters.
That Mitt Romney was going to come out, if this was a boxing match, he came out to knock him out in the first round,
sure,
and sort of move the needle a little bit, and he needed to. We were talking about just...
Yeah, the only way for Obama to actually win this debate was if Romney dropped out the next day.
Exactly.
Right. So
I mean, the expectations were tremendously high for Obama
But if we're talking about winning, what did Mitt Romney have to do beyond looking presidential? Well, he has issues with women. That wasn't covered, so he gained no ground there. He has issues with a lot of different interest groups in the polls. Those issues weren't talked about. There's no ground gained there. When it comes to who's looking out for the middle class more, I don't feel like he gained any ground on that. So on the issue of substance, I don't feel like any ground was gained or lost in a debate. Now, he did win the news cycle. The media political experts have given him a momentum that he can then use. And if he has something substantive to say, this is his largest window since the convention to be able to try to, you know, gain new life in the campaign. But as far as the issues that he was having trouble with, the issues, because his issue wasn't that his style is bad. His issue is that the things that he'd been saying have been reprehensible to a lot of the vote, a good enough number of the voting populace that the president has been able to get above 50%.
Well, Stacey, James, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you, Philip.
Norris Shelton. He's an activist, author, preacher, and liquor store owner. And now he is a candidate for Kentucky State Senate under his own banner, the Descendants of American Slaves Party. The 74-year-old businessman stopped by to talk about his views, background, and why he is running against longtime incumbent Gerald Neal.
The timing is perfect. That position is inactive. It's not working, especially for people like me, descendants of slaves. And I was drafted to run. At an open meeting, the people in attendance said somebody needs to run for Kentucky State Senate. And so everybody in the room pointed at me. So I accepted. I was drafted.
For residents, they know you as a community activist and founder of American Slaves Incorporated, which is a nonprofit. In that organization, you eschew using the term African-American and prefer descendants of American slaves. Tell us why you believe that is the proper moniker for black folks.
Well, it is. I don't know necessarily whether it's for black folks or not, but it is for descendants of American slaves. You see, African-American is legal terminology used by the Immigration Services Department to identify immigrants when they come into our country, such as Chinese American, German American, African American, white and black. And it goes on and on and on. It doesn't identify, nor does it give credit to people like me whose foreparents were bred here in America. My foreparents didn't come from Africa. The seeds that started our culture, sure, they came from Africa. They captured slaves and brought them to America, but they bred them. And I'm a descendant of American slaves.
You're an activist, published author, a preacher. Actually, your church is, and correct me if I'm wrong, First Church of American Slaves. And you're also a liquor store owner, Mr. Silk's on 21st and Muhammad Ali Boulevard. That's an odd combination, isn't it? I mean, and what I mean by that is that there is this criticism out there of being an advocate for improving black communities while profiting from this questionable business. Is that a contradiction at all?
Not at all. It's a contradiction only because a lot of people don't understand business and a lot of people don't understand America. You see, a liquor store is just a legal business, just like having a Bible store selling Bibles. It's the same thing. And I guess you can get too much of a Bible like you can get too much liquor. And I caution people against both.
Well, that's I've never heard that analogy, but I will take it. But there are those who say, Mr. Shelton, that liquor stores are sort of, at least in the popular mindset, both the people who live in inner city communities and those who don't, the liquor store is the badge of dishonor, oftentimes with drunkenness or vagrancy. Do you see why people are critical of you being this public advocate who has written a number of books telling African Americans and giving them sort of a blueprint for economic success, social success, while at the same time owning a business that many people see as that's the problem in our communities?
I used to feel that way myself. But I'm a businessman, and I've owned many, many businesses. And when I got ready to move forward to help my people this last time, God handed me a liquor store. And I wrote a book about it so people would understand it. The name of the book is Black Name, White Game. It's a wonderful book. People just love it. I cleaned up that corner. When I purchased that property, I admit it was in total degradation. But I took my time and I cleaned it up. And it's a pillar in the community now. Children, old folks, preachers, everybody that come there, they understand it and they appreciate it. Without that liquor store, we wouldn't have the American Slave Movement. We wouldn't have the First Church of American Slaves.
Because that funds a lot of your social justice work.
The liquor store funded everything.
I read a profile of you by Michael Jones in Leo Weekly, and it said your book, I think you've written six, but your most famous book being America's Little Black Book, it took you 15 years to write that. And you told Leo, let me quote you here, quote, "That book was given to us by God." Do you consider yourself a prophet?
I don't know what that means, so I guess I couldn't consider myself that because I don't know exactly what that means. But I have studied the past enough, And I have been in business long enough to be able to predict what's going to happen if certain conditions exist. If that's being a prophet, yes. Because if you look at slavery and the time that my kind of people were released from slavery to our civil rights movement to where we've evolved now, if you study it closely, you should know where we're going, figure out where we're going based on all the killings in the West Ends and the crime and violence since we lost
But in the sense that God spoke to you and inspired you to write that book.
Yes.
So in the same way that Moses came to God, you view yourself in that way?
Never knew the fella. But
you're not that old, are you?
not quite. I would say so. In fact, I've heard so many people compare my life to Moses's. But I don't, I never thought of it that way. I just wanted, I've always had an insatiable desire to help my people.
Now, on your opponent, you're running for Kentucky State Senate in the 33rd District. You're challenging incumbent Democrat State Senator Gerald Neal. In a recent campaign message of yours, you released a statement that said, quote, "If we don't upgrade the leadership in the 33rd District, while this window of opportunity is open, the killings and mayhem in the West End of Louisville will surely continue to escalate until out of control." What's the connection between his seat in the state Senate and the 46 homicides thus far in the city?
The connection is this. I think a state senator or anybody else, and Gerald Neal is a friend of mine, and all of them a friend of mine. I love them all. But I'm a businessman. And when you don't do your job in business, I've always fired people when they didn't do their job. That's just business. He's not doing his job.
But the voters consistently since 1989 have reelected Senator Neal by overwhelming margins, right?
I mean, yeah, because no one has had the nerve to challenge him.
He's had challenges in some of those races, though, right?
I don't know. I'm not a politician per se. I'm going to be a good politician.
You are one now.
Because I'm going to learn my job. And that was one question that people are asking already. So he's been there for so long, and what has happened, he has become stagnant. That position is stagnant.
But your contention isn't that he hasn't done anything, it's that he's not effective. Because he has done something in those 20-plus years while in office. Your argument simply seems to be that that's not good enough.
It's not near good enough. Not near good enough. And even though I'm not a politician per se, I know I can do a better job.
And you said you and Senator Neal were friends. I'm guessing you mean that term loosely.
Very loosely. Very, very, very
because
loosely.
Because one of the things you said in the profile of you was that there's a pretty ugly spat between you and Senator Neal. In fact, you said to Michael Jones and Leo, quote, our leaders are Uncle Tom's pure and simple. I wrote the book Gatekeepers. I updated it from Uncle Tom's of old to Gatekeepers of today. I'm guessing, are you referencing, when you say leaders, are you referencing your opponent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't bite my tongue. Everybody who knows me know that I always tell the truth. Can't help it. Don't know nothing but the truth.
I mean, is that fair to say simply because you have a disagreement with him politically that he's a race traitor?
Yeah, absolutely it's fair. You see, what have you done for me lately? but see, we have to understand, and at some point, if we want to clean this mess up and strengthen the West End, we've got to stop relying on what happened in the past. We got to start doing something now. And just because I was involved in the marches in the old days with King and stuff like that, doesn't mean that I can sit on my laurels and say I've did my job. No, I've got to do some multitasking here because it's necessary.
I'd like to get your views and where you stand on a number of various statewide issues. First, you're running under your own party. If elected, however, which party would you caucus with?
I would try to all of them.
Well, you can't caucus with both. You can't caucus with Democrats and Republicans. Well, there's one independent in the state Senate, for example, and he caucuses with the Republicans.
Now, what does that word mean? Maybe I should say it. Ask that. What does that word caucus mean?
I mean, the parties have their groups. If you are a Republican, you caucus with other Republicans. If you're a Democrat, you caucus with other Democrats. There you sign committee members, assignments for legislation, things of that nature.
Well, I'll tell you, I have been contacted by the Tea Party. I've been contacted by the Republicans. I've been contacted by everybody, and I want to work with everybody. I'd love to work with the Democrats. unfortunately, because Senator Neal sits in that seat, I can't work with the Democrats. They won't work with me. My plan is not biased. It's not written for a certain group. It's written for the betterment of mankind.
Are you in favor of expanding the state's Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care overhaul? There's some expansion of that. Are you in favor of expanding the state's Medicaid program?
You know, I've been studying that, and I'm not through studying that yet. But I'm going to give that some careful consideration.
What are your thoughts on the Affordable Care Act as a whole? Do you support what's called Obamacare?
Of course I do.
Generally,
of course
you support
I do. I have some thoughts about it, but yes, I do.
I'm sure you're aware of the governor's, Governor Steve Beshear's Blue Ribbon Tax Commission, which has been touring the state, finished touring the state. What would you like to see the commission recommend?
I don't have the information on that to answer it properly.
One of the chief things you'd be voting on if elected would be where does our tax code go? Because one of the things that Kentucky will face, according to consultants, Kentucky faces a $1 billion shortfall by 2020. Do you think any of these recommendations by the tax commission will pass the General Assembly? It's been said that one of the things that lawmakers cannot take on is tax reform because it's just such a divisive issue and it scares lawmakers off.
Yeah, it scares lawmakers off, just like slavery scares lawmakers off. But some of these tough issues are going to have to be studied and tackled. They've got to be looked at closely. A lot of times people
But it seems that you're, at least on taxes and on pension reform, you yourself aren't really sure how you would side or appear that knowledgeable about the issue itself.
Not entirely, no. You're right. Not entirely, simply because the taxes fund this country. And that needs
yes.
to be studied in depth by someone like me who doesn't have...
But do you think that would give Senator Neal an immediate advantage in the sense that he knows immediately about these issues and can sort of rack them off pretty quickly, whereas in you as the contender, and challengers already have enough problems with entrenched incumbents, let alone an entrenched incumbent of 20-plus years, but it seems that you have a problem as far as catching up with Senator Neal on those issues that he already appears to be pretty in-depth on.
I totally disagree. You see, I'm going to focus on the weakest link first. The issues that Senator Neal and the rest of them have been voting on, they've been voting on them for years, and they're going to keep on going normally the way they have been going, with higher taxes, lower wages, or whatever. They're going to keep going that way. What needs to happen is we need to stop and focus on the worst problems first, and then, because these others are going to roll along. They're already in place.
Well, Norris Shelton, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.